Parashat Vayigash, and it's on page 251. 51. We are already for a few weeks with the story of Yosef and the brothers. It's the third week that we are with the story of Yosef and the brothers. Our week's portion starts with the fact that Asher Binyamin was blamed to be a thief and taken as a slave for Yosef. Yehuda approaches Yosef in an attempt to free him and be able to bring him back to his father. Okay? Eventually, this meeting caused Yosef to reveal himself and to tell the brothers, this is Yosef. There was, again, unity between the brothers. Things came back to what they were before the selling. That's our week's parsha. I want to approach the parsha and understand this meeting between Yehuda and Yosef and what happened in this meeting by discovering something that is going through all through Chumash Bereshit. It starts the end of the Chumash. Next week is the last portion, Vayechi. We won't be here next week. It's a week off in between semesters. But it starts the end of the book. And there is something that takes place all through the Sefer of Bereshit, the book of Bereshit. And it comes to a peak in this week's Farshe. And when we see the whole Chumash together, we understand something that when we read parsha by parsha without looking at all of them together, won't be revealed to us. So, we know that when Hashem created the world, it was a perfect reality. First man was in the Garden of Eden and he had a perfect reality. It was the world in large was a place of a lot of holiness, a lot of perfection, physically and spiritually. But then men ate from the tree of knowledge. As a result, from the fact that he ate from the tree of knowledge, the whole world changed. It was not just that first man committed a sin and there will be consequences that will affect him. It affected all of reality. What happened was that holiness or the presence of Hashem became more hidden after first men committed this sin. After Adam and Chava ate from the tree, the reality was already a different reality, and Hashem was more hidden. Godliness was more hidden in this world. And obviously, it was the job of men to bring the world back to where it was before the sin. We know that for 2,000 years, people did not do it. They went away even more. There were some individuals who lived a life the way they should, but they were very few and spread all over the 20 generations between first men and Abraham. And they didn't affect the reality as a whole. They themselves advanced, became perfect, but the reality as a whole remained the way it was. Till Abraham. And I want to go through two stories about Abraham in the Chumash Bereshit. And it will enlighten us, not only in terms of what Abraham did later on, Yitzhak, Yaakov, the tribes, but it will explain to us a lot about our reality today. So I want you to open, please, at page 67. It's in Parashat Lech Lecha, meaning the story of Abraham is just starting to unfold. We haven't heard yet about too much of the life of Abraham. We just know that Hashem revealed himself to Abraham, told him to go to the land of Israel, and then the Torah tells us about a war that he fought in order to release Lot from captivity. And then, on page number 67, the Torah discusses a revelation that Abraham had. And I want to look into it a little bit. After these events, meaning after the war, the word of Hashem came to Abraham in a vision saying, "Fear not, Abraham, I am a shield for you. Your reward is very great." Not explaining anything about it, let's go further. And Abraham said, "My Lord, Hashem Elohim, what can you give me seeing that I go childless? And the slave, the steward of my house is Damascus Eliezer." Then Abraham said, "See, to me you have given no offspring. And see, my steward inherits me." Meaning Hashem just promised Abraham children, right? Abraham doesn't have children, right? And Hashem promises him the land of Israel. So Abraham said, what's the point, right? It won't go further, okay? Then go ahead, number four. Suddenly the word of Hashem came to him saying, "That one will not inherit you. Only him that shall come forth from within you shall inherit you." So Hashem promises him children, right? Then he said, and he took him outside and said, "Gaze now towards the heavens and count the stars if you are able to count them." And he said to him, "So shall your offspring be." And he trusted in Hashem and he reckoned it to him as righteousness. Okay, so Hashem promised Abraham children, right? And then he promises him the land. I'll skip to read, but I'm just telling you, he promises him children, right? But Abraham reacts by saying, if you look at verse number 8, the end of number 8, Abraham said, okay, "Whereby shall I know that I am to inherit it?" Hashem just told him, you are going to have children and I'm going to give you the land. So Abraham asks, how will I know? Just after the Torah tells us that he trusted in Hashem. So how do we understand it? So what Abraham says is as follows. You give me the land, right? And you give me children. At the moment, you want to give it to me. What will happen if my children will not follow in your ways? They have free choice. I don't know what they will choose, right? So how will I know that it will really go from generation to generation as an inheritance and it will remain by my children? So Hashem tells him to take animals, to slaughter them, to cut them into half. He makes a covenant with him. And Rashi explains that these animals correspond to different offerings that the Jewish people will bring in the future in the Beit HaMikdash. And basically it's an answer from Hashem telling him, don't worry, there will be offerings. And the offerings will atone for any wrongdoing of your children. And this will ensure that the land will be yours. Very good. Wonderful. Right? But as we know, the Beit HaMikdash will not ever be there. We don't have for almost 2,000 years offerings. As we see, miraculously, the land of Israel is ours. We came to the land of Israel, many of us, after almost 2,000 years of exile, and the nations accepted it. It's an unheard of reality, right? Can the Indians come today and say America is ours, live? Right? But that's the reality. So obviously it's ours. Hashem stands behind this world, even though we don't have korbanot. So what's going on here? So I want to read to you a midrash. Later on it's written, after the animals were cut into two, and there was a pass in between them. So the Torah says, verse number 17 in page 69. So it happened, the sun set and it was very dark. Behold, there was a smoky furnace and a torch of fire which passed between these pieces. Okay, what is it? This torch of fire, right, that went through the pieces. Rashi says, and it's also based on the Midrash, that this refers to difficult times that the Jewish people will go through. It refers to the concept of exile. And right after, as you see, Hashem tells him, right? Here, right after it's written that Hashem made a covenant with Abraham that he'll give him the land of Israel, right? So what's going on here? The Midrash says as follows. Shimon Bar Abba, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, says, Hashem showed Abraham four things. In this revelation, Hashem showed Abraham four things. Gehenom, right? Malchuyot, meaning four exiles, the giving of the Torah, and the Beit HaMikdash. Four things were presented to Abraham in vision about the future. I'll start with the good ones, Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, and the Beit HaMikdash, but also two that seem not so pleasant, right? Gehenom and exile. And Hashem told him, if the Jewish people, if your children will keep the Torah, right, and will have the Beit HaMikdash, they won't have to go through exile and won't have to go through Gehenom. But in case that they won't, right, what will be then? So Hashem gave Abraham a choice. He told him, there are two options if your children will not do my will. One is Gehenom, but not Gehenom after 120 years, but Gehenom after Mashiach comes, because we are told that the time after Mashiach comes, there will be the big day of judgment. And the fate of everyone, every individual, and every nation will be defined there for eternity. Okay, so our reality for eternity will be the final this day, right? So, what if we don't deserve? There is an option of Chas v'Shalom, Gehenom, forever. Or there is another option that we will have exiles and they will atone. And then, at the time of Mashiach, we'll have a wonderful future. So, Abraham chose exile. So at this point, Abraham chooses exile. What does it mean? What it means is that Abraham says, me and my children are accepting upon ourselves, for I, and in the name of my children as well, accept upon myself exile if necessary. Meaning, I am opening a new stage in reality. Up till now, people went away from purpose. I'm starting a new reality, right? And Abraham himself did everything in order to do the will of Hashem, but it has to go all through history till Mashiach will come, right? Till the last day, right? So we have to find a way to ensure that it will really happen, right? That the world will come to its purpose. So I accept upon myself exile, upon my children. And really here, Hashem tells him, right, that okay. The next page in 69, Hashem tells him about exile. Vayomer le'Avraham, verse number 13, right? And Hashem said to Abraham, know with certainty that your offspring shall be aliens in a land not their own, meaning there will be exile. They will fear them and they will oppress them 400 years, right? So what's going on in the future is really till today is described here. There will be an exile in Egypt. And in the wording here, without me going into it, there are a few times four terms, right? It's interpreted by Chazal as referring to all four exiles, meaning Abraham knows at this stage the thing that he undertakes to bring the world to purpose, it might mean one exile, in the best case, just Egypt, that is a preparation for the receiving of the Torah. And if not of the golden calf, the Jewish people would come into the land of Israel and it will be the time of Mashiach, but it will be after an exile. And if we won't do the will of Hashem, it will take four exiles. Okay? So What we learn here is basically that Abraham is undertaking responsibility to bring the world to balance. I want you now to go to another revelation that Abraham had, page 73. In page 73, Hashem commands Abraham to circumcise himself, meaning the difference between the Jewish people and between the rest of the nations is defined now also in a physical way, because Jewish people will be circumcised while others are not. It's like telling them, you are my people, you are different, you have a mission that others don't have. And in this times that Hashem commands him on Brit Milah, Hashem tells him something else. I want you to look in page 73, verse number 1. Chapter 17. Okay? When Avram was 99 years old, Hashem appeared to Avram and said to him, I am Kel Shakai, walk before me and be perfect, following the fact that Avram undertook it, right? I will set my covenant between me and you, and I will increase you most exceedingly. Meaning, in other words, the covenant is made. Avram is undertaking the job of bringing the world to purpose, and Hashem says, on my side, there is a commitment as well. And then, Avram threw himself upon his face, and God spoke with him, saying, as for me, this is my covenant with you. You shall be a father of a multitude of nations. Your name shall no longer be called Abram, but your name shall be Avraham, for I have made you the father of a multitude of nations. What happens here? When the previous revelation took place, Avram is still called Avram, not Avraham. The hay is missing. And the interpretation of it is the father of Avram. Of Aram, I'm sorry. Aram is a nation where Avram lived. And he was teaching about Hashem there. So he was considered the father of Aram. But now Hashem adds a hay to his name. And then the name Avraham means Av Hamon, a father of the multitudes of nations, meaning you become a father to the whole world. Or in other words, it's not just a local thing. It's not just you and your family, you and the nations that you are at the moment. By undertaking to bring the world back to purpose, the whole world, you become a father to all of the nations, and it's your job to bring the world in large, all of it, with all the nations, back to me. That's the mission that is given to Abraham. What it means in the least, right, is that there will be an exile in Egypt. And Abraham undertakes it. Also, the name of Sarai is changed to Sarah. And it's again the same meaning. Sarai means my princess, my queen, right? My leader. Sarah is the leader of many, of everybody. So this couple is undertaking to bring the world back to purpose. I want to say it in different words. What Abraham and Sarai start to do is to build a new reality. Hashem created the world. People did not make the right choices. The world lost the right of existence. So it's like starting from scratch. Abraham is starting to create the world again. And it is really already hinted to us right after creation. Okay. In chapter 2, in the Chumash, page 11, I want you to look at the Hebrew. There is one word that you must see in the Hebrew to see what I want to say. So I'll translate. Verse number 4, page 11. These are the products of the heaven and the earth when they were created. Okay? Look at the word when they were created in the Hebrew. It's behibaram. Behibaram, we have the root livro, to create. The bet. And the hay means when they were created, makes it into when they were created. This word is the letters of Avraham. Be Avraham. These are the products of the world that was created via whom? By Avraham. So it's already hinted in the Torah that the one who will really fulfill the purpose will be Avraham. And this makes Avraham a creator. That's why it's hinted in the word Behibaram, when they were created, because he is a creator. He was given the ability to create via his choices. So Avraham is starting to build a world, a new reality. How did he do it? Let's see how Hashem created the world. What initiated the creation? It's a pasuk in Iyov. Olam chesed ibane. This world was created because of the kindness of Hashem. Hashem wanted to do an act of kindness towards people, and that's why he created the world. So step number one is a desire to do kindness. So that's why Abraham starts with chesed. By Abraham doing chesed is really creating a reality the same way Hashem created a reality, starting from the place Hashem started, the desire to do good to others. As we know, after the will of Hashem to create came the actual creation of the world. If we look at the name of Hashem, all through the story of creation, it's Elohim. Elohim, as we know, is the attribute of justice. What is justice? Justice means there are laws, there are boundaries. Things are created and they are given the realm of their action, a framework that they can act in within. They are limited. Everything is limited by the laws of nature and by what the capability that was given to this creation is. I'll give an example. In the beginning, the whole world was full of water, Badem to tap. What happened on Tuesday, the third day of creation? Hashem gathered the oceans, the rivers, to specific places, and they are not given permission on a normal basis to pass these boundaries. Right? So the same with everything, right? It's given parameters and it has to function as a creation in within these parameters. This is called din. Din judgment can be done only if there are rules, if there are parameters, if there are limitations. So that's why when Hashem created the world, the name of Hashem is Elohim. What it means, in other words, is that kindness alone is impassive, because if it has no boundaries, it's destructive. If everyone will give everything to everybody at any time, there will be chaos, right? We have to think when to give, to whom to give, is it helpful, is it harmful, right? So creation itself is limitations. And in essence, it means hiding Hashem. Hiding Hashem, because what gives the possibility to cross a boundary or to keep the boundary? Free choice. Free choice is a consequence of the fact that Hashem hid himself. So that's stage number two. Who followed Avraham Avinu? Yitzchak. So he's continuing to build. What does he add? Din. Right? We know that the attribute of Yitzchak is Din. He was very, very, very careful about boundaries and didn't want anything that he doesn't deserve. If he doesn't keep the boundaries well, he wants consequences. That's Yitzchak. So we have the two things that are needed, right? Kindness on one hand, boundaries on the other. But now the need is to create the right balance between them. And this was Yaakov. Yaakov created the right balance between kindness and din, chesed and din. What creates glory, splendor, because it's a beautiful picture when everything is balanced. So Jacob was a perfect person. But what was the job of Jacob? I want to elaborate a little bit. The last story that we hear about Abraham is the Akedah. In the Akedah, Abraham and Yitzchak, their strengths, chesed and din, right? Kindness and justice combined. Or very infused in each other in the proper way. And that's why in the story of Rechtat Yitzchak, it's written a few times, Ve'elchu shnehem yachdav, the two of them went together. Meaning there was a combination of these two. Beautiful. But now, this combination that was achieved by Abraham and Yitzchak together, Abraham starting, Yitzchak continuing, and then the infusion, the combination at the time of the Akedah, has now to become the way of behavior of the whole world. It has to come to this world, right, and express itself in the actions of people all over. First, the Jewish people themselves, and this should influence all the rest. And that's why we find something very interesting. The life of Yitzchak was a good life. We don't find extraordinary tests by Yitzchak, right? He added what was to be developed after Abraham, right? And now it's wonderful. But it has to come now into this world. In order to come into this world, one has to be involved in the world. Yitzchak, after the Akedah, was already in a different world. This was not his job. He was out of this reality. He lived already in this world, like in Gan Eden. So he is not the one to bring it into this world in large. Yaakov is starting it. What does it mean to bring it into this world? It means to go to places where Hashem is totally hidden, where there is no holiness, at least not obviously, where people misbehave and bring impurity to this world, and influence make a difference there, affect it, and reveal the holiness that is there. That's basically the concept of exile. Exile has two meanings to it. The word in Hebrew is galut. We know exile means to be out of place, right? We left the land of Israel, we went to Babylon, we went to Rome, right? Galut, exile, we are not in the right place. That's physically. But also spiritually, there are things not in the right place. There is holiness hidden very, very deeply in places of impurity. It has to be redeemed. It has to be revealed, the holiness in those places. That's what Yaakov did. Yaakov had a conflict, a confrontation with Esav, right? Then with Lavan. Then the story of Dinah. And then he went down to Egypt. All those places, all those people that he had to deal with were people who hid Hashem. Their impurity prevailed. And Yaakov had to influence it, to reveal the hidden holiness even in these difficult places. Okay? To make a difference there, to reveal Kedusha, to reveal light in the places of darkness. That's the job of Yaakov. To bring it all over the world. And that's why he went from one exile to the other, from one difficult reality to another difficult reality. He ended up in Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was the peak of impurity. As we know, there was a lot of kishuf, mechashfim, chartumim, people who had mastery of impure powers and even changed nature as a result of it. Right? They were immoral. They worshipped idols. It was a terrible place. To that extent that commentaries say, I think it's the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, if I'm not mistaken, but I'm not sure, that Hashem himself came to redeem the Jewish people on the night of Pesach, because even an angel could not withstand the impurity of Mitzrayim. But it was the job of the Jewish people to be there and to be able to come out worthy of becoming the nation of Hashem. It's not an easy job. Very difficult job. So it started off by Yaakov, but in a very interesting way. To Lavan, he went by himself. It was his decision. To Shechem, he went by himself. It was his decision. To Mitzrayim, he came through his son Yosef and the story of the sale of Yosef. Why so? What is the story all about? We explained it in many different ways. I want to add another way to understand it today. As we said, Mitzrayim is a very difficult place. And Hashem sent the Jewish people there because if they can withstand Mitzrayim and maintain their identity, they are ready to face history with all that it will bring upon them and eventually succeed in their job of bringing Mashiach, of correcting the world, bringing it back to where it's supposed to be, right? But as I said, it's not an easy job. So it starts with Yaakov, but it doesn't end there. Yaakov has 12 children. They are called Shivtei Kad, the tribes of Hashem, because they were all great, very holy people. And they were 12. And different from each other. Every one of them had a potential to reveal godliness in his particular way, based on the powers Hashem gave him, the challenges that Hashem gave him. Every one of them was able to perfect one of the midot. As we know, there are 10 midot. 7 that are very famous, right? Chesed, Gvura, right? We have 7 weeks in the Omer because we were these 7 midot, right? It's like a ladder of growth, right? 7 things that we have to perfect. There are 3 more. There is Chochmah, Bina, Vedat, the attributes of the brain, right? Chochmah, wisdom, bina, deeper understanding, that becoming one with the knowledge, internalizing fully and completely to the extent that one follows it without any conflict, right? So there are things that have to be perfected, 10 of them. And each of the 10 tribes, putting aside for a moment Yosef and Yehuda, was the one to perfect one of them. Yosef and Binyamin had a different job. They were the foundation. And I'll explain. Yosef was a perfect human being, like Yaakov. Perfect human being. Ele toldot Yaakov Yosef, the Torah says. These are the generations of Yaakov, Yosef. What about all the others? Of course, all the others were his children. But Yosef and Yaakov had a lot in common. And the Midrash lists a long list of things that they were alike. So Yosef is the reflect, the continuation, perfect continuation of Yaakov, a perfect person. He was very, very, very high. And basically a leader of the tribes because of it. He was appointed by his father as a leader of the tribes, right? Because such perfection influences others. And this was the job of Yosef, to influence the others. And we find that he did it. Practically speaking, physically speaking, and spiritually speaking. Let's see what the Torah tells us about Yosef. There was a famine. Who collected the food, preserved it because of his righteousness, because the Egyptians also collected, but it became rotten. And it was the righteousness of Yosef that gave it existence for 7 years and more, 14 at the end, right? And he gave the food to everybody else, meaning he's the provider. That's what the Torah says. Yosef hu ha-mashbir. Yosef is the provider. He's the one who influences. And this was a means for him to influence spiritually. First, he perfected himself via the very test of being in Egypt and remaining Yosef, regardless of the environment and the difficulties that he went through. Perfecting himself via the test with the wife of Potiphar, right? And then being appointed a king. We find something very fascinating that on a superficial level, it's hard to understand. When the Egyptians came to him for food, at the beginning, they had what to pay for, what to pay with for the food. But later on, they didn't have anything anymore. So Yosef told them, the Midrash says, circumcise yourself, and then I'll give you food. And Pharaoh told them, do it. You want food, do it. Yours got rotten. He's not, right? You have to follow. To circumcise means to take away impurity. So Yosef went ahead with the job of Yaakov, of bringing godliness to a certain extent, even towards Egypt, even into this difficult place that is full of impurity. Because his job as a leader was to be the one to provide, to influence. That's what Hashem created him for. As we said, each tribe had his own mission, and in this way was a leader. And Yaakov saw it, and that's why he appointed him leader. But I want you to open in page 261. There was somebody else that was in Mitzrayim before the family of Yaakov came. Look at verse number 28 on page 261. The Torah says, he, referring to Yaakov, sent Yehuda ahead of him to Yosef to prepare ahead of him in Goshen. Somebody else was sent before. Obviously, it's necessary. Right? It's necessary before the Jewish people, 70 people of the family of Yaakov, come to Mitzrayim. There is somebody else that has to prepare the ground. And who is it? Yehuda. And what did he do there? He prepared a place of Goshen. And our sages tell us he built there a place for learning Torah. Okay, so it's another leader. Yehuda is another leader. Binyamin is together with Yosef. They are the foundation. As Yosef is perfect, Binyamin is perfect. Binyamin is one of 10 people who died only because of the sin of first man, meaning he never committed a sin. Looking at his deeds, he should have come, he should never die. And Chazal say he didn't die, he went into Gan Eden alive because he never committed a sin. The Holy of Holiest is in his part of the land of Israel. So these two are perfect people who are influential, right? The Beit HaMikdash is built, the Kodesh Kodashim, in the part of Binyamin. What is Yehuda? Yehuda is the tribes that kings will come out of later on, right? David HaMelech, the whole lineage, and eventually Mashiach. What's the job of Yehuda? Yosef is great, but his way cannot be the way of the masses. It's a special way. It has influence, but not everybody can be Yosef. Not everybody can be Yosef, like not everybody can be Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and sit in a cave for 13 years, right, and study Torah when his whole body is in the sand, right, and eat a little bit of carobs and drink water, and still be totally immersed in Torah. But this is a special level. Yehuda is the one who makes it feasible and possible for everybody. The greatness of Yosef, being that it was more for the individuals, was hidden. This enabled the mistake of the brothers. It was not revealed. The job of Yehuda is to reveal Hashem in an open way. If you look at the word Yehuda, It has the letters of the name of Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, and the letter Dalet. What does the letter Dalet do there? The name of Hashem, we understand. He dedicated his life to thank Hashem. Yehuda is to thank, right? Lehodot, to thank Hashem, to spread the name of Hashem, to bring it to the masses, to enable the masses via his leadership to connect to Hashem. This is what a king is in the Jewish nation. It's not a warrior or something like this. He might fight a war too. But the essence is to unite the Jewish people and connect them to Hashem, right? So that's Yehuda. What's the Dalet? The Dalet is what enables him to do it, the character that enables him to do it and achieve it. Dalet comes from Dal. Dal means a poor one, a person who has nothing. The greatness of Yehuda was that he felt that he doesn't deserve anything, he doesn't have anything on his own. Everything he has is Hashem. Any success that he has is from Hashem. Any good thing in his life is from Hashem. And that's why he kept thanking and thanking and thanking. If you look at Tehillim, this is what David HaMelech expresses all along. I am a worm. I'm not even a human being. Right? He doesn't give any credit to himself and doesn't stop thanking Hashem. That's David HaMelech. Okay, now, this, the fact that Yehuda does not hold of himself nothing, enables him to accept from Yosef. Because to accept from somebody else, you have to put aside your ego. If you think you have it all, you're not open to receive. And Yehuda gave for all generation this DNA of knowing that we are not accomplishing by ourselves, that our job is basically just to create a vessel to accept from Hashem. So in the household of Yaakov, Yosef is the one who influences, who is perfect, who is great, beyond great, right? And he's ready to bestow. Who is the receiver who creates the capability to receive by knowing that nothing is his accomplishment? That's Yehuda. And we are called on both. The Jewish nation is called sometimes Bnei Yosef or Ephraim, which is the son of Yosef, or Bnei Israel, or Yehudim, right? On the name of the two, because we need both of those. We need this and we need this. So we have 12 tribes, we still 10 who perfect themselves, each one in his special way, and two leaders who enable everything to happen and who also put all of them together. When you have a leader, there is unity. Okay? As we know, things happen and a rift was created between the brothers and between Yosef. And we know the story. This story will express itself later on in Jewish history when the kingdom in the Jewish nation was separated into two, the kingdom of Yehuda and the kingdom of Ephraim. Right? It happened after Shlomo HaMelech, right? The kingdom was split into two, and it was a difficult situation. There were even sometimes wars between the two parts. Obviously, the ultimate goal is the unity between the two. That even though every tribe is different and right in his way, right, develops in his way, right, according to what Hashem assigned him to develop and accomplish, and even though they are very different, they have the capacity to unite, and then we have the perfect picture. Each one of them brings godliness into one area, develops one good way of revealing Hashem, and when they are united, everything that has to be accomplished is accomplished, and that's the time when this accomplishes fully on a national level. This is the times of Mashiach. So up till now, we learned about the friction, right? It's quite a goal, right? When everyone sees things from his perspective, and his perspective is the true perspective, right? So it's not so simple, right, to live in harmony, right? And there is room for mistakes, right? But now it comes to the point that Yehuda faces Yosef and tries to release Binyamin. When we read what Yehuda says to Yosef, on a superficial level, we do not understand what convinced him, because basically what Yehuda said, he said the facts as they took place this point. He told him, "We came down to Mitzrayim. We have a father in Israel. You told us this. You told us this. This is what happened. This is what happened. Now Binyamin is by you, and I'm demanding of you to release Binyamin." Right? Now, it was not a simple story for Yehuda to approach Yosef. He doesn't know he's Yosef. Yosef was very, very harsh to them. Externally, he behaved very harshly, right? And in ways that seemed like looking for an excuse to cause pain, blaming them that they are spies, even though so many people came to Egypt for food and they were among them. So why are they blamed that they are spies? Giving them back the money, inviting them for a meal with Yosef, blaming Binyamin for the gavia, for stealing, and so on. Things that did not make sense, but appeared as very, very, very harsh. Yosef hid his bleeding heart, right? Very, very well. And the brothers did not know he's Yosef. But Binyamin is my Yosef. And Yehuda promised his father that he'll bring him back. And as of that, they understand what it will mean for Yaakov if Binyamin remains by Yosef. So Yehuda is ready to self-sacrifice himself. He doesn't look at the danger. He doesn't look at anything. He prepares for prayer, for war, for convincing. And he puts himself on the line in a very, very strong way. And when Yosef saw how committed is Yehuda to release Binyamin, who is the son of Rachel, like him, right? He couldn't take it anymore, and he revealed himself. Meaning he saw that the rift between the house of Rachel and the house of Leah is gone. How did he see it? Via the self-sacrifice of Yehuda. On the other hand, what happened? Yosef was really very harsh, but it was all external. Yehuda could say, "There is no way. He's looking for trouble. He's blaming us for no reason. So what can we do? Can't help it. It's not logical. There is no basis to what he says. So how could we do it?" But Yehuda did not do it. Yehuda said, "What's taking place here is too strange. There must be something inside, behind it, and I must reveal it." And we self-sacrifice them to do it. Our sages describe this reality, Yosef's reality, Yehuda's reality, and what they did in order, or what they did that eventually caused Yosef to reveal that he is Yosef and the unity came back. Both of them tapped into something inside them that is very, very deep. Yehuda tapped into the heart of Yosef. He brought him to a point that he could not anymore continue just doing what the brain tells him. Because inside Yosef was a very, very big heart. But he acted according to his logic in order to bring the tribes to do tshuva. But Yehuda revealed the heart of Yosef to an extent that Yosef could not anymore hold back, and he revealed himself. Yosef, on the other hand, revealed self-sacrifice in Yehuda that he might have not known that he is capable of. It was not simple to do what he did. Until he came to this point, the things were for him a life question. With Benjamin or without Benjamin was for him a life question in this world and in the world to come too, because it promised Jacob that if it doesn't bring him, he will lose his world to come too. He's giving away his world to come. So it was a life question for Yehuda. And when it was a life question to that extent, he revealed himself the power of self-sacrifice that affected Yosef. So what does it teach us? Hashem gave us a very challenging job, and we undertook it. Exile, meaning the undertaking to bring a world to purpose no matter what. When Abraham said, "I am ready for exile," he said in other words, no matter what it will take, as difficult as it will be, I am ready to go ahead till the world will come to purpose. He envisioned the Holocaust too. He envisioned the Inquisition too. He envisioned October 7th too. All the exile contains. And he committed himself nevertheless to bring the world to purpose. Esav was not ready for it. Esav chose to go and get his piece of land right away, Seir. That's what the Torah tells us, that when Yaakov and Esav separated, Esav went to Har Seir, and the story of Yosef starts. Exile is starting for Yaakov. And Yaakov accepts it, continuing with Abraham, who accepted it, continuing with the tribes who accepted it, and continuing with all generations of Jewish people till today, that no matter what we go through, we still remain the nation of Hashem and dedicated to the purpose. There will always be a core of us that will continue to do it. What gives us the ability? The meeting between Yosef and Yehuda explain it to us. What he tells us is that deep down inside us, we have a potential that if we tap into it, we can accomplish it. When Yehuda, in his wisdom, was able to tap into the potential of Yosef, and Yosef, in his wisdom, was able to tap into the potential of Yehuda, then they were able to overcome all the differences, all the difficulties, and the revelation came. The revelation that stands for the revelations that will be at the time of Mashiach. Then everything is clear, and the whole picture looks different. And then there is no hatred and no jealousy and no nothing. Everybody sees his place and how he brought Hashem into the picture. What was his share in bringing Hashem into the picture? Okay, our sages describe it in the following way. There was a well with very pure good water, and nobody could get to them. It was very deep. So somebody who was wise came and took ropes and tied them one to the other, one to the other, till he got a long enough rope. At the end of the rope, he put a bucket, he lowered it to the well and brought up the good water. Okay, so this is what Yosef and Yehuda did. There was something very deep in Yehuda, something very deep in Yosef, a potential, right? And they were able to bring it up. But the Midrash continues and says, after this person did it, everybody could enjoy from the water of the well. But they revealed already that Yosef is Yosef. Yosef said already, "I'm Yosef." So who are the others? Right? At this point, Yosef revealed himself, and there is no reason anymore to go to the depths to discover things. It's all in the open. So commentators explain this speaks about all future generations. That by Yehuda and Yosef doing it, by the tribes, or let's start from Abraham, by Abraham undertaking to go to exile, even before sins, Mitzrayim, as preparation for the mission. And later on, Yitzhak adding what he had to add, the tribes adding, Yaakov and Yehuda. Yosef and Yehuda as leaders. When every one of them did what they had to do, they created our DNA and our ability to tap into what's inside us. And if we have self-sacrifice the way they had, meaning if we are very determined to reveal our potential, right? And do it, then as an accumulative thing, will bring the redemption. I want to share with you something that my husband told me that really had an effect on me. There was, at the time of the Holocaust, a group of Gerer Hasidim who disregarded totally the Nazis. Under horrible circumstances, they were in bunkers, sitting and studying Torah while being hungry. They did not cut their beards and payas, didn't go out ever. Other people provided them with the little that could be provided. They were not registered, so they didn't get anything from the Nazis before they were transported, as they gave the other side some ratio of something, right? They basically dedicated themselves fully and completely to Hashem, and many of them died on Kiddush Hashem with unbelievable greatness and completion of heart, saying Shema Israel, even dancing, asking forgiveness from each other, to the extent that after the war, the Belzer Rebbe was very holy, met the Imre Emes, who was the Gerer Rebbe of the time of the Holocaust, right? And he told him, your children sanctify the name of Hashem in an unbelievable way during the war. Okay, interestingly enough, the leader of this group was called Matityahu Gelman. He was from an assimilated family. At the age of 15, he became a Baal Shuva and grew to become an unbelievable leader that inspired all of them to do it. One of them that survived, my husband. And one day he asked him, tell me, what do you think? Our generation, if God forbid, if it will face such a reality, will be able to do what you did? He told him something amazing. His response was, if you would have asked me before the war, if we are capable of doing it, I would tell you, I don't know. Under these circumstances, somehow they revealed in us a potential that we were not aware of under normal circumstances. So sometimes it's the exile, the difficulty, the fact that we are misplaced physically and spiritually, that brings us to reveal the inner potential, to return to Hashem and to redeem ourselves. And when enough Jewish people redeem themselves, the nation as a whole will be, Mirza Hashem, redeemed very soon. Okay, I'll open to questions and remarks.
Before we open for questions, the class is Le'ilu Nishmas Yehuda ben Chanoch and Me'ira Chaya Nechama Bracha Bas David Mordechai. We will open for questions right now. Okay.
Okay, I just wanted to say that there's actually, the Rebbetzin probably knows, there's a book that speaks about this Matityahu and his crew. I think it's called Those Who Never Yielded. It's by, the last name is Prager. I have the book somewhere here. Have you heard of it? Yeah.
I read it in Hebrew. I didn't know that it was translated into
Yes,
English.
it is. It is. It's out there.
Okay, I recommend. It's fascinating. Okay, let's go further.
Hi, thank you, Robertson.
Sure.
I have two questions. One question is, what midah is Yehuda then among the brothers? And another question is, in the parsha, when Yosef and Binyamin, it says Yosef cries on Binyamin's neck and Binyamin cries on Yosef's neck, and they're crying over the base of the two Batei Mikdash and the Mishkan and Shiloh. So how is that connected to the rest of the theme, I guess, or why are they crying for this at this point?
Okay, I don't know which of the seven Midos are Yehuda or the 10 Midos are Yehuda. The way I saw it described is feeling that he doesn't deserve anything. And I don't
Okay.
know. Okay. Now, but you said that they cried because of the Beit HaMikdash. Obviously, they knew that they are building a future. It is connected because they were great people and they knew what will happen in the future and they understood it on this level. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yes. You mentioned that Hashem gave Mila to show that we're different from other people, but Mila
Right.
isn't the most hidden place that a person could have.
What did you say?
The place of the Mila is totally hidden. So how are people aware of that?
Oh, and in the Holocaust, that this was how they revealed who is a Jew.
No, what I'm saying during whole creation, we're in different societies. Nobody would pick us out for that.
People know that we circumcise children. It's a very unusual thing. At the age of 8 days, you take a baby, you make him go through surgery, and you celebrate it. Think about it. Abraham was afraid that this will separate him from all the other nations. But it's not just the physical. When a person goes through circumcision, that's when the Jewish aspect of his soul is given to him. It's more than physical.
No, but it's not, but it wouldn't be evident to the outside world that would see us to know that this is what's making us who we are.
There are many other ways that they see that we are different. We
Of
dress
course.
different, we behave
Of course.
different, and so
Of
on.
course.
But our essence, our spiritual essence, is given to us then for boys,
So
right?
that's for
And
us.
this is what differentiates us from other people. It creates holiness. And this could be seen, okay, in behavior and also in aura when it's very obvious.
Okay. Also, we're talking about the thankfulness of Yehuda. What about like his mode al emes? I mean, when he confessed after the episode with
You
Tamar,
are
that was one of
right.
his most,
You are
strongest
right.
points that made him be able to rule over himself.
You are right. You are right. That's why there are many ways to explain who is Yehuda and who is Yosef. That's why Yehuda is considered the Baal Tshuva, even though he didn't do anything wrong. Because it's written that he was forced to be with Tamar because Hashem wanted Mashiach to be created at that point, and he was worthy of it. So was Tamar, right? But the fact that he admitted in public when it was very uncomfortable,
Of course.
right? Very, very uncomfortable. This is creating for us the possibility of tshuva. Right, so there are many, many things that we can say, but to which exactly of the seven midot do we connect it? I don't want just to guess, you know, I don't know.
Another question is when we were learning the parasha of Vayeshev, that everything the brothers did it l'shem shamayim. They did it like they sat down, they bought shoes because you're not supposed to mourn for a somebody who's like was killed by Beis Din. So what when they did the thing with taking his coat and dipping it in blood and showing it to Yaakov, that was like so false. I mean, like how does was that justified? Were they punished for that especially?
Because they didn't want Yaakov to be in mourning, right? So if a person dies after a certain time, you forget about him. So they wanted, that's one way to explain it, they wanted him to think that he died. But obviously it didn't help, right? He mourned for all the years, right? But this was one of the reasons that they did. There are explanations to all the details in many, many, many ways. And one thing is for sure, they were the greatest of people, and that's why they were given such a job, right? And exactly what took place there, we don't know. We learn it on the level of what can I learn from it? Okay? What can I learn from it? For me, what really took place? We don't know. We have to be on their level in order to understand the calculations. We are not in this area right? In this height, that these calculations will even come to our mind. That's why we refer to commentaries, because they were great people. They have more of an ability to relate to what took place because they are higher. Okay? But we cannot figure it out on our own. And what they tell us is, again, what we have to learn from it. The Ramban says that all that is written in Bereshit, all the stories, are beyond our comprehension. Still, he writes a commentary. Why? Because we have to learn from it. If the Torah told it to us, we have to learn from it. Okay, so if you remain with the question, okay. Even though there are explanations, yet all the details. But you read all the explanations and still, it doesn't feel straight to us, or we are not content with it because we are not on the level to understand enough in order to be content.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Dina.
Yes, on the subject of the Bris Milah that she was just talking about, if Bris Milah is the covenant or the sign between the Jewish people and Hashem, why did Abraham or why did Hashem have the rest of the household circumcised as well?
It's a law till today. I know about, I heard from somebody that his great great grandfather, whatever, was in the south of the United States, the very beginning, right, many years ago. And he had slaves. And according to law, he's obligated to circumcise them. So he told them, they all disappeared the night before.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, anybody else?
Reminder, ladies, I'm sorry to interrupt, Mrs. Cohen. No class next week. We're going to begin again on January 6th.
Yeah, okay. Have a good week. I'll see you, Mirza Shem, in 2 weeks.
Very good. Thank you so
Yeah.
much again.
Sure.